what we just watched. I'm Ian.
And I'm Chris.
This is The Undertaking, where we meet to watch and then discuss two TV shows.
With the added excitement being, oh my god, we don't know which programme the other person has picked.
But which to watch first?
We decide by playing Rod Palin Sissons. After three, one, two, three, Sissons!
Sorry, Chris. Michael Rod covers Peter Sissons. So, we'll begin with my selection. Okay, I'm about to press play. As usual, you don't know what I'm about to show you.
Okay.
So brace yourself.
Okay.
Here we go.
Well, what we're watching here is an episode of Take Two.
Correct.
Which is the children's BBC Right to Reply style programme.
That's a good way of
describing TV
it.
About TV. There's some video machines, reels going. Lovely. Oh, nice shot of Television Centre.
And who's the host?
It's Philip Schofield.
All right, so let's have enough of the chat and get on to watch the programme itself. Right, well, we just watched an edition of Take Two. Mm. It was broadcast on the 18th of May, 1988.
Yep.
Presented, as we said, by Philip Schofield.
Yes.
And the main focus of the programme was Wogan.
Yes.
We'll mention that in a moment. But first of all, I have to ask you the standard question. Did you actually enjoy it?
If I'm being honest, I didn't. It's quite fun to watch a kind of contemporary discussion of the pros and cons of Wogan from 1988.
Yes.
But it kind of it felt a bit odd. It's quite difficult to judge from, you know, 28 years on. It's quite difficult to judge it on its own merits. You kind of need to put yourself in the frame of mind of watching the show.
A child watching at the time. I think perhaps the main problem is that the program is 25 minutes long,
yeah.
and a good 15 minutes of that,
yes,
is devoted solely to a quite detailed examination of Wogan.
We should say that kind of the main meat of that is a kind of an interview. Philip Schofield interviewing the producer or the editor.
Yes, there's a new producer who's just been appointed to Wogan, a person called Peter Vile.
Would you please welcome the series producer for Wogan, Peter Vile?
He's been there 6 weeks.
Yes.
And to mark this, and also I think to mark the fact that it's 500 shows of Wogan. They choose Wogan for the subject, and as was always the case with Take Two, they go to a school somewhere in the UK to ask pupils what they thought.
I think it's really good. So, I think I like the way you dress up and everything. You always look smart. You always make some people feel at home. You know.
Yeah.
And in this instance, we've got two groups of pupils from schools in Bodmin.
Yeah.
And what we get, as I say, for about 15 minutes, is quite a long critique of Wogan.
Yeah, I think that's one of the reasons why I didn't enjoy it, in that when it comes down to it, school children sitting on hard classroom chairs in their school uniforms, giving their opinions on TV, they're not that interesting.
The choice of guests is very good. Like, they have people singing a pop song on, perhaps. And they'll have people from politics and people that were on QED or something, you know.
Well, most of them didn't look particularly pleased to be there and didn't have very enlightening things to say, although they had some quite quirky things, some of them.
They did.
As you'd expect. Accusing Terry of being boring, not listening, and the audience paying more attention than the presenter.
The sections with the kids I quite like is one, you know, sometimes they would kind of come up with entirely contradictory thoughts on Wogan. So one kid would say,
some of the people I've never heard of on there. I want to bring some people that are a bit more famous, you know, and they know what they're going to talk about. Yeah.
And then cut to another kid saying,
I like the way he sort of gets new people in that you've never seen before.
Sometimes you'd get them coming up with quite sort of esoteric things, like the person, I think one of them said that the stage needs to be better organised so that there were no, so everyone had sight lines of the act, so that half the people sitting in the theatre could actually see, whereas the other half couldn't.
And there is quite an involved discussion, which kind of keeps recurring, about Terry's appearance, Terry's dress sense.
They don't like it, do they? They think his hair is greasy.
So one of them said he's got greasy hair.
I like his hair, though. It looked all greasy.
Of all the things you could accuse Terry of, his greasy hair is right down the bottom of the list.
There's a really brilliant bit about when Philip Schofield asks the producer, about how he's 6 weeks into the job. It's a big show. It's kind of one of the bulwarks of the BBC One schedule. And Terry's been there a long time. And Philip says to Peter Weil,
"How do you produce it then in that case, if Terry is, as you say, I mean, the biggest star in the UK, a phenomenally successful programme? Is he still producible?"
It's a very good question. And one thing that that whole section does show is that Phil is actually a very good...
Yeah. He's very perceptive, isn't he?
Yeah, at this point in his career, perhaps we'll talk later about what happened to him since.
Yes.
But anyway, at this point, he shows himself, regardless of the subject matter and the things he said he asked, he's a very competent...
Yeah.
He keeps the interview moving along.
Yeah.
He's very courteous.
Yeah.
He clearly makes the guest feel comfortable.
But he's also, kind of also... He's on the kid's side, isn't he?
Children's comments very seriously and sincerely as well.
Yeah.
But do you think overall that the whole Wogan segment was itself a success? Do you think... I mean, were many of the children's questions actually answered?
Peter Weil seems... You know, he rather politely bats away some of their complaints about kind of whether the questions are boring. He is very much in the mould of the BBC producer who's been called in in one of the BBC's periodic attempts, you know, to interact with licence fee payer.
Yes, there is the whole thing smacks a bit of that. And I guess... when did the whole sort of see for yourself open air business? Well, this was fairly early.
This is very much
history,
plum in the middle of that era.
Good evening and welcome to See for Yourself. This is the programme that gives you the opportunity to decide what you think about the way the BBC is run.
Yeah, because we're into the Michael Checkland, John Bird.
Yes,
the BBC
this
now,
is the BBC being accountable to you, to you, the licence fee payer.
Well, let's talk then about the whole show itself.
I loved the set and the whole...
Oh, you did?
Yeah, yeah. Because I quite like... You get a sense of a bit of the stairs up to the gallery. There's a bit of kind of the bare bones of the studio.
It's quite
on display.
A sort of stripped back studio. It's an odd mixture.
Which is kind of a fairly unoriginal conceit for a show about TV to do that. But it's done very well.
Let's explain what we see, because Philip Schofield is sitting in a sort of half-bare, half-decorated studio.
You see the cameraman at
you
a certain point.
Technicians, camera crew move in and out of shot, and he sits there. There's no audience.
Mm.
It's dead quiet.
Yeah.
It's like you can hear sort of off-camera noises from time to time. The book papers being rustled.
Yeah.
And around him, dotted in this sort of bare studio, sort of slight... gestures towards a bit of set dressing. There's
well,
like a column I've, here and a board there.
I've got to say, there are kind of some of the great kind of totems of this style of television, which I was delighted to see. Number one being a map of the British Isles.
It's map time.
With arrows.
Our schools come from the West Country.
To denote where the schools are that they've got the kids from.
Film a great play of fixing onto this map.
Yes.
An arrow.
Yes.
Way down here, lovely part of the world. And we are in Bodmin.
To show you where this week's
Bodmin
are,
which is not far from Newquay,
where I grew up, by the way,
I grew up in Newquay, which is there, but that's just by the by.
And also, there's a big overflowing mailbag, which...
Well, that was a stock prop.
Absolutely.
For any sort of programme, into the witch, viewers advised to write. I guess that prop dates back to the swap shop days,
where a
large sack of mail... would be used to somehow equate with popularity.
It feels reassuringly archaic, doesn't it?
He reads a rather tokenistic selection, one just sort of praising children's BBC for being great.
And the first comes from Anne Martin, aged 14, from Harrowweald in Middlesex. I'm writing to tell you how much I enjoy children's BBC.
Another one asking about video boards for pets.
I can understand what that was at all. It was a broom cupboard feature where they had a cat video board.
But a slight complaint from Maria Trainer, aged 10, from Saltash in Cornwall. After seeing the cat video board on children's BBC, I was not pleased.
There's two different types of letter segments. There. At the start, we get sort of brief correspondence, but then there's a thing at the end which is called a written criticism.
Yes.
Which is basically a long letter.
Yeah.
Doctor Who was once an entertaining, action-packed adventure series that ran for 26 weeks.
And here we encounter the views of a 15-year-old.
The show was suspended for 18 months and returned for a 14-week run in the autumn of 1986.
If you needed to sort of characterise Doctor Who fandom in 1988, would you think this letter would be a fair summation?
Absolutely, yes.
The humour is much too evident. I suppose having humour in the series is all right, but for the fact it isn't at all funny.
Because not only is it joylessly pedantic,
yeah,
it seems to consist of extraordinarily obtuse points,
yeah,
about how long the show used to be on the,
yes,
air. If you,
yeah, 20, it used to be 26 weeks and now it's only 14 weeks.
And all sorts of minutiae about BBC policy.
Yes.
This person was sacked and this, yeah, person was, yeah, brought in. There's a reference also to BBC bosses.
Yes.
Which is,
yeah,
it's
interfering, meddling, yes, BBC
those
bosses.
Suits, those nasty BBC bosses. And all it does is to really just show off the obsessional nature of the writer.
And of course, the obsession with John Nathan Turner. And actually, casting aspersions on his abilities to cope. They actually did. I don't think he can cope.
No, says this 15-year-old.
Why hasn't that not been on a Doctor Who DVD? We need to talk about something that kind of happens quite early on, and which one I find this a fairly baffling production decision, is in that Philip opens up the show,
yeah,
and he tells us where the kids are from, and then we launch into something that's akin to Tony Hart's gallery.
Yes, we see a collection of pictures, paintings, drawings,
yeah, yeah,
that viewers have sent in, which was, yeah, a part of the show every week.
Yeah.
But I think you're bemused as to why this
it's
was the
first thing
item
in the show. Well, I kind of find it a bit odd to have an art section in the show altogether.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it was a big deal, though, would you not think, for people to get their work on television? I would have been thrilled to see something that I'd...
I'm not suggesting you wouldn't be thrilled, Ian, but it feels rather... It just feels out of place to me.
Well, the whole point, wasn't it, was this was an interactive show,
well,
before,
yeah,
interactivity was,
yeah,
a thing.
Yeah. What is actually spectacular about that sequence is that there are hundreds of drawings.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And just the idea now. It's very difficult to talk about shows like this and the viewer's reaction to them without kind of wallowing in kind of nostalgia. But it's extraordinary that people would sit down and draw a frieze depicting all the characters from Willow the Wisp without any guarantee that you were going to get anything. Not that you would do that with that's your prime motivation, but it's, you know.
Well, let me ask you this then. What would you have drawn?
What I would have done is a kind of a sort of family album drawing of all the characters from
Neighbour.
Because bear in mind, this is very much
this was peak Neighbours.
This is peak Neighbours. So I'd have had Des, Daphne, Mike. I think I might have put them in kind of
in boxes. What in a family tree, in little jewelry holders, picture frames. What? It's better be good.
It's not.
The Neighbours was mentioned a couple of times in the programme, wasn't it? We heard someone complaining about Jason Donovan being everywhere.
Yes, but then he also answered his own question by pointing out that Jason was in Britain. That's the reason why he was on every radio programme. He complained about the number of times he'd been on the radio.
Yes.
Which I'm not sure that's in Take Two's remit.
We had a couple of Neighbours' pictures on the board, didn't we, of Jane and
yes,
Charlene.
I also need to complain about the fact that they chose a drawing of Inspector Gadget, who was not a BBC property.
I wasn't sure about that, whether ITV children's programme should have been allowed onto the picture board.
I think that's a lapse, really.
Let's quickly mention the signature tune.
Well, let's be very brief about it, because it's not the greatest theme tune of all time, is it?
It's rubbish. Well, it's badly recorded. It sounds all compressed and it's on a third generation cassette tape.
It pales in comparison with, I think, what we all know and love as the quintessential theme from Take Two, which is the Shack Attack piece that they used to use.
Well, that was take two.
And now it's time for my show. Right, so Ian, on screen we've got the Yorkshire Television Chevron. How does that make you feel?
Well, it makes me feel a little bit anxious. I know that Yorkshire TV did some very good stuff, some very good sitcoms, for instance, but it also did some absolute dross.
Well.
And I'm a bit, well, I'm now going to reserve judgment because...
Okay.
I don't want to prejudice the outcome of this particular viewing.
Okay. So I'm just going to press play and away we go.
Okay.
what do you see, Ian?
Well, it's the inside of a prison cell or inside of a jail.
Yes. So what's the show?
It's The Bounder by Eric Chappell.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter Boll's name has just flashed up.
Yes.
Which has already filled me with some reassuring feelings.
Good.
And
good.
George Cole's name has also appeared.
Yes. So that was The Bounder. We watched the second episode from the first series, and that episode was broadcast on the 23rd of April 1982. So, Ian, how did that make you feel?
Well, I think when I first saw the opening titles, I was actually quite intrigued because I'd never seen it before.
Okay.
Never watched The Bounder before.
Okay.
I heard about it. I knew Peter Boles was the star.
Yes.
And so I was initially quite excited, but I'm afraid, I have to say, as the show went on, my opinion changed.
Really?
Yes.
What caused that?
Well, maybe we'll talk a bit more about some of the things that are in it, but generally, I found that it didn't really sustain itself across the whole episode.
No. Perhaps we should talk a bit about The Bounder, the show, and talk about the plot of the episode that we just watched. So in The Bounder, Peter Boles plays Howard Booth, who is a fraudster, a con man who's just been released from prison.
Yes.
So he goes back to live with his sister and his brother-in-law, who are played by Rosalind Ayres and George Cole. So in the episode we just watched, it is Trevor and Mary's 15th wedding anniversary.
Mary, happy anniversary, dear.
Flowers? Oh, and a card.
And Howard has forgotten.
Our best man, you can't even remember our anniversary.
Yes, I must say I was a little hurt, Howard.
That timeless sitcom trope. So he thinks on his feet and takes them to the Majestic Hotel.
Well, you didn't really think I'd forgotten, did you? No, I booked a table at the Majestic.
For a lavish, romantic dinner.
But Howard, the Majestic, it's so expensive.
Oh, Mary, please don't thank me. That look in your eye is reward enough. Right, get the green mould off your dinner jacket, Trevor. This is going to be a night to remember.
Of course, he doesn't have any money to pay for the dinner, so he just basically tries to bluff and con his way through the evening, through a succession of, would you call them, farcical scenes?
Well, I think the whole thing aspires towards a sort of a faulty style, Basil Fawlty style farce,
yeah.
And that's the impression I got throughout, with a sort of a trying to evoke a sense of a crescendoing mania.
Yeah.
But I don't think that works. And for me, the problem begins and ends with Boles himself, I'm afraid.
Really? This is devastating.
He is basically doing the same thing in this episode over and over again.
Yeah.
I'm terribly sorry, sir, but we can't possibly squeeze you in. You see, we have several extra functions on this evening, perhaps another night.
I see. It doesn't surprise me. These are the reports we've been getting.
Reports?
Yes, they all say the same thing. Wilson's a good man, but inflexible. Never prepared to accommodate the unexpected guest. A slave to routine.
But not a lot else there to sort of to enjoy.
I would go so far as to say there's actually nothing else. And I would argue that Peter Boles is actually really good at
this.
But
you think that's fine for him to basically be the only thing in it?
I would love to see the script because I'm imagining that kind of pretty much, I don't know, would about 75% of the lines go to him?
Even more than that. I mean, I was struck very early on by the fact you've got someone like George Cole in it.
Yes.
And he could be absolutely anyone. There is nothing at all that George Cole brings to this.
Absolutely.
Certainly in this particular episode.
Steady on, Howard. Don't want to upset them.
And you worry that, you kind of feel that maybe they kind of thought, at this point, George Cole was just becoming a national figure as Arthur Daly. Arthur Daly, a little dodgy mighty beaver underneath. He's all right. And so the temptation here is for him to be completely different to Arthur Daly. He's actually a fairly... He's an incredibly mundane and insipid
character.
Well, I want to talk about that later on because I think that's one of the huge flaws in the show. And unfortunately, Rosalind Ayers is fairly antiseptic as well.
Yes.
Stop worrying, Trevor. It's Howard Street, isn't it, Howard?
We should point out one of the sort of the side plots is that at the hotel, it's the old Benthamians 1956 rugby club reunion. And Howard sort of manages to bluff his way.
Excuse me. I hope you don't mind me asking. But have we met? Only this is a private party, old Benthamian's Rugby Club, and I don't seem to remember you.
Bodger Booth, first 15 prop 56.
Even though he makes terrible crashing errors, he still manages to inveigle his way into this party.
Yes.
He sort of befriends Glyn Owen, Jack Rolfe from Howard's Way.
Somebody's nicked my bloody boat!
Who's also a kind of, he's a cigar-puffing kind of, as a former pupil. I liked all the stuff where he was pretending to be a kind of...
Well, I think that's it. You either buy it or you don't.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid I didn't see enough here that made me want to spend any more time with any of these people, especially Peter Bowles, and I'm afraid... I just didn't find that particularly appealing.
Did you not... How do you normally feel about Peter Bowles on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I don't really think about him very often on a day-to-day basis, to be honest.
Shame on you.
If I was prompted to think about Peter Bowles on a day-to-day basis, I'd think firstly about To the Man of Ball.
Yeah.
Obviously, it means nothing to you, but the Pony Club Gymkhana has been held in the home paddock since the year dot.
Since 1973, actually.
And then when he was... when he replaced Jeffrey Palmer in Executive Stretch.
Right.
To try and reunite him with Penelope Keith.
Yes.
But in all of these situations, he's playing the same character.
Well, yes. I don't think even he would argue with that particular
one. The DVD that we watched describes him as being at his most caddish. Well...
Well, yes.
I'd like to see him being slightly less caddish.
Well, I think...
Is there any other
I would say that his performance in The Bounder is kind of slightly over the top.
Yes.
Whereas in To the Man of Born, he is playing an archetypal smoothie, but he dials it up to 11 or 12.
Well, yes. I think, again, it's the... unsubtlety of it, and also.
But I think you kind of either go with that or you don't.
Well, fair enough. I mean,
and I think it would. I think if you're going to do that, you also need someone who is also at that same pitch to.
Yeah, I think that might be it. I think it's the.
Whereas
fact that
George Cole just seems so weak-willed and milky, and
I think that's it. There isn't anyone else in it who is as strong enough or developed enough as a character. To make it feel more substantial.
I was going to say that I think it suffers from what you might call sorry syndrome, where the sit is just not strong enough. So you kind of watch it and you just think, well, why doesn't Timothy just leave?
Yes.
And in this, you just think, well, why doesn't George Cole just kick him out?
Yes. It's there's not enough of the con to distract you from the sit. And therefore dispel those kind of nagging doubts.
And you don't really have any sympathy for George Cole and Rosalind Ayers because they just let him walk all over them.
And it's a shame because you've got these really good, you know, these are very good A-list
absolutely.
Actors.
Yeah.
And Eric Chappell has an obvious pedigree.
Yeah.
And you know, I mean, at this point, this was 82. So it was before Duty Free.
Yeah.
Before Home to Roost.
Yeah.
But post Rising Dam.
Yeah.
And I think what else was he doing? Was it Only When I Laugh? Oh, yeah. So he was this sort of one-man powerhouse of sitcoms.
We need to talk about that, because one of the reasons The Bounder got made is because Peter Bowles refused to do another series of Only When I Laugh. Unless Yorkshire Television gave him a vehicle of his own.
Ah, so it was one of those deals, was it? I'll do this as long as I get that as well.
He's H-A-P-P-Y.
Yes.
And how long did the band only last?
There were only
two
series.
So they got rid of it.
And interesting, the second series, Rosalind Ayers doesn't appear in it at all because she's left Trevor. So that makes it even more pointless. George, just kick out Peter, because he's up to no good.
So how could it be improved? What's missing from it? It is another character.
It does need someone who
introduces an element of unease for him.
Absolutely. There's another character in the series who is the Trevor and Mary's next door neighbour, played by Isla Blair, who is sort of the love interest. For
Bowles.
Yeah, for Bowles.
Okay.
But she can quite clearly see through him. But even so, it's kind of. I was thinking about kind of something like Yes Minister, where normally Sir Humphrey gets the upper hand, but sometimes Hacker does. And you need someone like that in The Bounder who can duel with Peter Bowles and sometimes get the better of him.
I think you're right, yeah. One thing I did, which did please me a bit, was some of the little details that were in it.
Okay.
The sort of slightly faded glamour of the hotel.
That was quite well done.
What's this?
A prawn cocktail, sir.
A prawn cocktail?
Yeah. The fact that they were prawn cocktails and salmon was the main dish. A large salmon.
Yes.
Was somehow seen as an opulent feast.
Yes.
And I also liked how there were references to things like, someone from head office. And these were things that were sort of staple vocabulary of sitcoms that there were references to be to a head office.
Yes.
I don't understand, sir. What reports?
The reports at head office. Oh, perhaps I should introduce myself. Boom.
Or someone works outing or something. This language of everyday workplace.
Well, but
which you don't get anymore.
At one point, Peter Bowles' character talks about Faraday, who at head office.
Yes.
It's not his first name, or anything
they
like
don't
that.
Have
you
first
just
names.
You just refer to them by their surname. One thing I really like about the show is that kind of it opens with you, so you get the Yorkshire Television ident. We kind of fade into the interior of a prison, but you still get the Yorkshire Television chevron looks like it's behind bars. I also want to talk about the theme tune, because there are actually two theme tunes. So we open it with this kind of rather nice piece from Vivaldi.
Yes, it's from the Four Seasons.
But then that kind of sort of segues into this kind of rather sort of loungy kind of piece of music. So Howard's character kind of initially seems this kind of respectable, cultured figure, but when you get to know him a little better as time passes, you see him for what he really is.
That reminds me.
Lounge lizards. So the bit where it came back to part two, that had a sort of melodramatic kind of version of, oh, things are kind of, there's trouble here. One thing I really wanted to talk about, Ian, was kind of the climax of the episode where the rugby club reunion are in pursuit of Howard because he's stolen the centrepiece of their dinner, which is a big salmon, which is on a huge platter. At the end of the episode, Trevor is tucking into it, and so they debag him.
The rugby club
debag
instead
George
of
Cole, which obviously we don't see. So the very last line of the episode is
Howard, those are Trevor's trousers.
Howard, those are Trevor's trousers. Ian, how did that make you feel?
I'm chuckling now because of the way you've described it. You've painted a much better picture than the one we actually saw. Because if you, all those elements just mentioned, a giant salmon, a rugby club scrum.
How could you go wrong with
George
all those elements?
Cole, someone who's in their trousers.
Yeah.
all those elements in isolation add up to something. Oh, this is fantastic, an ideal climax. But yet it was somehow not satisfying because it was badly staged.
Yeah.
When the trousers were flung in, you weren't quite sure what they were. The timing was a bit off.
Yes.
The pacing was flat. And so even that, given this promise of such a conclusion.
Well, that's a shame.
I thought that was a bit of a flop.
Okay.
Okay, here's a question then. Who or where are today's TV cads?
You don't really get cads anymore, do you? I mean, Hustle is the last thing I'm thinking of where you kind of got sort of con artists.
Caddish behaviour.
Yeah, doing their thing on TV. But you don't tend to get... kind of like the character of the smoothie seems to have sort of died out, really. I mean, the kind of like, if you think about the 1980s, you had kind of Wilmot Brown in EastEnders, you had Peter Egan in Increasing Circles. But that kind of sort of well-dressed kind of smoothie, you know, seems to have...
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's a bit... You know, are we Anthony Head from the Gold Blend adverts?
Well, yes, I suppose caddishness isn't really in favour at the moment.
Well, there's a lot. Well, certainly a lot of caddish behaviour going on, but but kind of it's almost more overt now. The Peter Bowles character, the totemic Peter Bowles. He seems to have...
What about someone... Well, you don't get a sort of the character of Raffles, the gentleman thief.
Well, perhaps we should.
Because, yes, you're right.
Updated these, for the 21st century.
A cad is someone who gets up to no good, but they're likeable. You kind of... The ideal cad is someone who you are pleased to see.
Yeah, you want them to.
You want them.
So if you had Raffles the Gentleman Thief now, though, do you think he might be into...
He'd be into cybercrime.
Yes. Yes, he would. And it would be terrible.
Do you not think... Yeah, because... Because that is kind of slightly out of date now, isn't it? But it's the sort of thing that TV...
That's what they would do, absolutely.
They think, oh, it's cutting edge.
Yes, yeah.
So we've watched an edition of Take Two and an episode of The Bounder.
Yeah.
Of those two, Chris, which do you think you enjoyed more?
I would say I enjoyed The Bounder more.
Oh, really?
Yes, I did.
Oh, well, I'm going to have to go with Take Two. Just because I found all of the Wogan chat fascinating. But Take Two actually kept me interested.
Really?
Even during the Wogan bits, because I suppose that was interesting. Whereas I'm afraid my interest wandered in The Bounder.
Well, come on.
Like Peter Bowles' wandering eye.
I have to say, you know, I would never claim that The Bounder was in any way a great sitcom, but I've got to say Peter Bowles being Peter Bowles, you know... What's not to like about that?
You rate Bowles above Schofield?
I do. But isn't that the duel we've always wanted to see? Bowles versus Schofield.
You have been listening to what we just watched from TV Cream, in which we watched an edition of Take Two from the 18th of May 1988.
And The Bounder from 23rd of April 1982.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.